Hey everyone, it's that time. Let's unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle, and let's start exploring the wine glass.
This one is dedicated to each and every one of you who appreciate a great glass of wine. You know what I mean?
On today's episode, I am diving into the world of sherry with certified sherry wine specialist Lucas Paya. Join me as I learn about the fortified wine made from the white grapes that are grown near the city of Jerez in Andalusia, Spain. During the conversation, we discuss how sherry is made primarily from the Palomino grape, is produced in a variety of styles, ranging from light versions like the Fino to darker and heavier oxidized versions such as the Pedro Ximénez, as well as everything in between like the Oloroso. Thank you to Charlotte at IT Public Relations for organizing the interview. Music by Kevins, publisher KTF Publishing, distributor AWAL label KTF Music.
Why? I want a nice glass right now.
Welcome back to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine and want to explore it more. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program, Sommelier Service, and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all of the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. Thank you to everyone who has given us a review. Leaving a review on iTunes or the purple icon or whatever the heck it's called will drive us up the charts and allow more wine lovers to find us. If you haven't subscribed yet, now is the perfect time. I promise, I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Allure of the Pour, sponsored by Dracaena Wines. Today, I am getting down with sherry, and I know very little about sherry. In fact, the only stuff I know is from a one-day class of my WSET, and you know, you're doing other stuff with WSET, so that wasn't very much. And I did sneak in on a Zoom video tasting with my guest, and that is what led to this podcast. So today I have Lucas Paya with me, who is a sherry specialist and brand ambassador for the House of Lustau, who makes sherry. And we're going to go through some questions that I'm assuming if I have them, you have them too. And I'm going to get to be tasting some sherry here with the expert to tell me what to do and how to do it. So welcome, Lucas.
Thank you for having me.
So I am so excited. Before we get into sherry, my first question for every interview that I ever do is always the origin story. So I read that you know, because when we do these interviews, I have to do a little stalking on the internet. And I read that you gained your love of wine from your parents. And I just want to hear, how did that love of wine come through? How did your parents introduce you to wine? And what was your childhood like if your parents loved wine? It couldn't have been, it must have been pretty nice.
Yes, well, it wasn't that I was actually drinking the wine when I was young. It was more, well, you know, in Spain or part of Europe where I'm from, I think the legal age is more 18 than 21. It depends on the country, but during my teenage time, you know, I remember my dad and my mama, especially my dad, having pretty much always, not every day, but many times a bottle of wine on the table having dinner and talking about it, you know, and making remarks or some comments on that bottle or the specific region or the producer or the grape variety. And then whenever we would go out to a restaurant, the whole restaurant scene, the chef, the cuisine, the service, the wine, everything was also remarkable, you know, and he would enjoy that very much, and he still does. and transmit that to me, over to me, you know, and I could feel it, and all that triggered an interest in culinary. And I love cooking. I love restaurants. I love chefs. I love eating well. But I kind of like tend more toward the service, the front of the house, the interaction with the guest, and on top of that, the wine, because the wine fell back in the day when I started to study and take this 3-year course, hotel and restaurant management course, 3 years in Barcelona. I felt that the wine aspect to the culinary, the restaurant scene, was more special, even more special than anything else. And that plus my influence from my parents and that particular lifestyle put me closer to learning about wines, and I say that yes, there's certain influence from my family, but at the same time, I'm the only one in it that actually made a career out of restaurants or service or culinary. Nobody else in the family has that I know of for the last 2 or 3 generations, or even farther out, that ever decided to work on to work in that kind of industry. Okay. So
they just enjoy it. They just enjoy it on their own.
I do. They did. Yeah, they do. They do enjoy it as a supplement to a good life, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I decided to take part in it.
Awesome.
It's a little different. Yeah.
When you completed the WSET, were you already in love with sherry, or did you get introduced into it at the WSET level?
Well, actually, when I studied wines for the first time about 20 years ago in Barcelona, there was not WSET courses available back then. So what I did, as I was saying, I enrolled this 3-year hotel and restaurant management course or degree. And then in it, you could find like an extra side study that was a two-year course on wines, worldwide wines. That was, at the time, was really a very prestigious course. Again, the WCT wasn't available in Barcelona back then. It was conducted by the same school, and it was the most prestigious culinary school, hospitality school in Barcelona, in the city. And it was backed by the University of Toulouse in France. But it was not a WCT, Corps of Master Sommelier, Master Wine, or any other wine scholar guild. Nothing of that was pretty much available. Now, after I completed the 2 years of this private degree, this course, the first region, after becoming a sommelier by this private school in Barcelona, the first region I ever visited as a professional somm, now with my degree, was Jerez. We did that with another two student fellows from the same course. And once we graduated, the first region we thought, probably Burgundy had to be second, but the very first one, Jerez. We say, after everything we learn about this region, we have to go visit. And trying to answer your question, yes, after that first exposure to wine as a career. I learned Jerez during the course, during 2 years. And soon after I graduated, I thought, this is a region that has to be on top of the list as far as going and visit, because it's very complex, it's very special, it's very unique. It's not far away from that far away from you, so it makes total sense for me to go and me and our friends to go and explore. And that's what we did. So I always say this thing, the first ever wine region in the world that I professionally visited after becoming a sommelier 20 years ago was Sherry.
All right. And when you were there, I'm sorry, when you first moved to the United States, you then took over a role of being responsible for 15 restaurants. Right. So that must be massive. Like, how do you deal with 15 restaurants and acquiring a wine list? I'm assuming each restaurant has its own identity of what they want.
Yeah, that was my previous work with Chef Jose Andres. I moved to the U.S. In late 2007, beginning of 2008, and he started to expand out of the D.C. area. He was very well known in Washington D.C., but back in the day, around that time, he started to have these collaborations with other companies outside Washington D.C. And the first one he opened outside of this region was Los Angeles. And I started my job there as a beverage director for the SLS Hotel. And then from there, after 2 years of becoming the responsible for all beverage in that hotel, and then moving to Las Vegas to open a casino and another 3 restaurants. 3 years later, Jose asked me to come back to Washington, D.C. and take over the entire company as the wine director. Most of the restaurants were already open. Many of them had a clear, precise idea of what the wine program had to look like, you know. In that case, it's a matter of just making things evolve in the same direction. You don't need to work on the 15 restaurants at the same time every time. You can focus on different smaller. Sometimes maybe you can group them under the same theme. Some of them were more Spanish cuisine. Some of them were more like Mexican, Asian. Jose has a little bit of everything. Some of them were more avant-garde. I'm coming from a very creative avant-garde cuisine. And so that's Jose with his connection with Ferran Adrià, the renowned chef from Spain. So a little bit of everything. Sometimes you could like focus more on a type of cuisine and then expand the wine program or the wine selection for that particular type of offering, you know. But at the end of the day, it was total 15. It was busy times, yes. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to be on the floor at the 15 restaurants the same day, which would have been very interesting.
That would be interesting.
But you need to keep an eye on all of them, throughout the months and the seasons for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. So let's get into Sherry. So as I said earlier, I do not know very much. In fact, my really only introduction prior to the WSET was that one little blue bottle that mom and grandma used to have, after dinner drinks with the ice cubes in it and all of that stuff. And mm-hmm. So let's start off with Jerez itself. Can you tell us where it's located, tourism-wise, how people can get there, what they can expect beyond drinking sherry, what they can expect if they go there?
Yeah, I mean, Jerez is a historic wine growing region with recorded history, recorded evidence that go back pretty much 3,000 years. It's in the southernmost part of Spain, or the Iberian Peninsula, actually very close to Africa. The only thing that separates Africa, Morocco, Northern Africa, from Jerez is the Estrecho de Gibraltar, the Gibraltar, you know, very, very narrow piece of body of water that flows in between the two continents. You can see Africa from Jerez. You can see the Atlas Mountain Range pretty much on any given day. So it's right there. It's very close. I think it's only about 9 kilometers at the narrowest point. Oh. So Southern Europe, the southern most tip of that Iberian Peninsula, and very very historic, very famous, more or less consumed, but with a lot of experience as far as wine growing and wine making. Is one of the regions that has been imitated, faked the most over the course of the centuries, and people have their perceptions or conceptions or misconceptions about the wines in the region. Jerez used to be a wine, possibly top three wines in the world 200, 300 years ago, also maybe 600 years ago, maybe 1,000 years ago. So there's these cycles, these up and down cycles that make the region more or less profitable or famous. 50 years, we see this tendency to think of Jerez as that wine that your grandmother used to enjoy, maybe a wine that it's rather sweet, oxidative or sort of oxidized in its taste, and that doesn't require finishing the bottle anytime soon. That's fine. I mean, you can do that with Jerez, but Jerez or Sherry is many more things as well. And that's what we're trying to explain, that this very old region from southern Spain offers endless opportunities, tremendous diversity, and different styles of wine that can please you any time of the day and go well with pretty much any dish, any ingredient you may plan or you think of, or you may think of enjoying throughout the week, along this month, or throughout the season. So the diversity of the region keeps us busy as far as explaining that Jerez cannot be related to a single expression of wine. So going back to that bottle, that blue bottle that you used to see on the counter at your granny's place, that's possibly one style of Jerez, but I can tell you that there are another at least 8 styles that are as important and as enjoyable, and that Jerez can be the driest wine you can try on that occasion. And Jerez can be the sweetest wine you can try on that occasion and have many different appearances. It can be pale, almost like water, or it can be opaque, dark, like more oil. I'm telling you, some wines look like more oil.
All right.
So that diversity is what keeps us busy, because this is a very, I don't know if the word is complex or complicated, region, and it requires tasting and explaining and hopefully interest
and
from
that,
the audience.
That's what we're here today for. We're going to learn a little bit more. So one of the things that I think is kind of confusing is that whenever you look at sherry, like in a book, right next to it is port. And they're two different things, right? So one, what can you explain what the difference between sherry and port is? And two, why do you think they're, why are they always next to each other?
The, the classic way to study wines typically breaks down into sparkling wines, what's known as table wines or light wines, then spirits, maybe also you can make sweet wines separate. And then there is one volume, one episode, one chapter that is dedicated to what's known as fortified wines. And these are usually the oldest or some of the most historic wines in the world. And that concerns, for instance, port, Madeira, Marsala, sherry, those famous wines from southern France that are usually sweet. All those wines, all those regions that, again, were probably created many centuries ago, or many decades ago, and that all of them involved a fortification process. So the thing that unifies these regions, let's now stick to port or port and sherry, is that in both, in port and sherry, you see an addition of external, extra alcohol, grape spirit, sometime during the winemaking process. So all of them could be classified under this fortified wine. And that's the way most of schools or study programs do it, WCT included. Now, if we're to compare port and Jerez, there are some very interesting things to cover here. Grape varieties, port is mostly red, Jerez is white, climate, soil, port is more sometimes extreme continental, as far as you know, the higher part of the Douro. Jerez is more a mild Mediterranean climate. Soils, Jerez is more, port is more like schistose, sometimes some parts of granite, but usually schist is the better sites. Jerez is calcareous chalk limestone. And then one very important thing, which is when that fortification comes to play. So yes, all of this, all of these regions, Port, Madeira, Marsala, Jerez, are fortified wine regions, but a big difference between Jerez and most of the others is that in the case of sherry, the fortification only comes to play once the fermentation is complete. So for the most production of Jerez, you're going to be harvesting the grapes, fully fermenting the must into a dry base wine. And it's only once you have this dry base wine, which is usually pretty light, some people like to call it neutral, but let's say a light dry wine, around 12% ABV, it's only then that you add alcohol to that wine. And then you produce a lot of Jerez with that base. And these are all the dry wines in Jerez that maybe fewer people know about. We'll talk about the blends, which are then mixing sweeter wine into dry wine and making these wines that maybe your grandmother used to enjoy so much. Those are the blends. But a lot of dry Jerez is produced in the first place. That's a big difference between Jerez and most of the other fortified wine regions. In port, as you know, it's only after, what, 2 or 3 days of that massive extraction and maceration of those crushed red grapes that you actually arrest the fermentation by adding that grape spirit. So port by nature is a sweet wine, whereas Jerez, in its origins, is dry or bone dry. So a few things to compare between, in this case, port and sherry. And then possibly Jerez has Jerez has a larger diversity because of that too, has a larger diversity of styles or profiles. Port, if we compare tawny versus ruby, a more fruity port versus a more oxidative or oxidized port, those could be the two major families, and then everything kind of like goes from there, but both of them are sweet. In Jerez, again, this is the driest wine you're going to try today, and this is the sweetest one you're going to try today, and everything in between. So in Jerez, we have a much larger variety of styles and profiles.
And then also, sherry uses a Solera system, right? And can you explain what that is and how that is so historically significant to what sherry is?
Yeah, Madeira also uses Solera. Some other regions may play with that as well. And at the end of the day, the taste of the wines, if you taste them blind, could be similar. But yes, the Solera is no doubt an important aspect also associated with Jerez and more to Jerez than more with Jerez than any other possibly wine region in the world. A Solera system is a complex system involving many, sometimes fewer, sometimes more, groups of barrels. You have several groups of barrels that are all arranged in a way that all contain the same wine. The same wine, same, the same age, at the same stage of development. And then you kind of like put them close together, all the different groups of barrels. You keep always the wines pristine as far as not blending groups of barrels between them, but you blend the different groups of barrels, not the barrels inside the same group, at a different ratio. It could be maybe 3 times a year, maybe it's just once a year, but you keep blending the different groups of barrels that all of them contain wine at a different states of development of different age. At the same time, you keep adding the fresher wine from that vintage. You keep adding that into the system at the same time that you're pulling wine out of the system. So if you pull wine out of the system 3 times a year, you're going to be adding fresher wine from that vintage 3 times a year. So you keep the same amount of wine in all the barrels. You keep the different groups separated, but you keep blending wine in between the groups. And that creates a very stable wine across the vintages, across the years, and a non-vintage wine, a wine that shows a kind of like unique profile that is maintained usually for decades, unless you start doing critical or very important things to the Solera. The Solera is going to be very stable. And it was a way to make sure that the wines could keep their, you know, their quality and their style without much effort. So a very unique way to produce wine, possibly out of fashion these days if you are to start making wine in a different wine region. But it's being kept in Jerez because it's the best way to produce the classic styles of Jerez year after year. So in fact, you could not be making many of these styles if it's not using a Solera. So it requires this arrangement to produce the style of Jerez.
So we're going to go into the styles of sherry, of Jerez. So sherry is divided into several different styles. And that's where I think a lot, at least for me, I think a lot of the confusion comes in for me. You know, you've got Fino, Manzanilla, and I'm probably pronouncing them incorrectly, but Amontillado, Oloroso. And each one means something very specific. And if you can learn what each one means, then maybe you can find what style is more to your palate as you're getting into it. But before we get into that, because I have three bottles that that were sent to me as samples, and I thought it would be fun to taste with you and you tell us about each of these bottles. But I want to first talk about the house that makes them. So it is the house of Lestau. And if you can tell us a little bit about the house itself and their history of making sherry, and then we're going to get into the styles and taste.
Yeah, the House of Lestau is one of the classic all-time houses in the region, going back almost 125 years now, 124 this year. So from 1896, one of the houses that has been producing wine in this same fashion ever since. A winery that started as an almacenista as opposed to be a sherry house. They were small and family owned and very very artisanal in all their ways. So it's like comparing a house of champagne or a champagne house versus a grower. So they were small, they didn't sell their wines abroad, you know, to the market, so they were more selling their property or their soledas or their productions to the bigger houses. That was Lestau at the beginning. That's why the connection between, in Jerez, this is known as being an almacenista. That's why the range of almacenistas that you find in Lestau. So they were small, family-owned, and with a low-scale type production. And then in the mid-20th century, they grew enough to become finally an export house, what's known as a sherry exporter. That was in the 1950s or so. So going back many years, it's not the biggest house whatsoever. It's mid-sized compared to other much larger wineries in the region. But Lestau is kind of known for their very broad selection, wide collection of wines. I think they have like about 60 different SKUs. So many different labels, a lot of variety, kind of showcasing that diversity that I was telling you before that the region puts out. I always say that is an asset because you need to taste, today we're tasting three wines, but we could be tasting 9 or 15, right? So you need to taste a lot of different styles from Jerez to get a whole of the region. And Lestau offers you that possibility many times at something known as an entry level, involving wines that are maybe 12-year-old wines. So that's what the region offers, you know. So Lestau has specialized in having a large selection of quality wines. And then they usually have very small soleta systems compared to other big brands. So more rare, limited production wines, and with a little bit higher average aging time. So those are the things that may define Lestau, besides being 125 almost years old winery. So a very important producer, very oriented to exportation, a producer that always has been in very important markets in Europe, in the U.S. is one of the, up until maybe 5 or 10 years ago, it was the for sure the most the best known winery from Jerez. So oriented to export markets and with a large collection, high quality, limited productions, and a great winery to taste a lot of different Jerezes again if you want to understand the region for sure.
And I actually did, I think I saw when I was looking them up online, they actually have packages that have different different styles of the sherry in it as kind of, I don't want to use sampler pack, but as like an introduction into the different styles. So
yes, there are wineries that are, and we can start talking about the actual categories or styles of Jerez. Mm-hmm. There are wineries that are only producing fino or manzanilla or biological wines. There are other wineries that are more expert in producing oxidative, darker styles. Some other that are, are producing very good sweet wines. Lustau does a little bit of everything and does it all very well. As you can see, if you visit their website, you'll see that they have a number of labels for each of the measure styles of categories of Jerez. So, again, it's you can learn the entire region just using wines from Lustau. That's what I would like to say. I mean, with this winery, you can, and that doesn't happen pretty much anywhere. Some producers in Burgundy don't produce wines out of all the communes, right? You need to keep trying different producers to see the comparison between Gervais Chambertin and Bonnet, maybe, you know? Here with Lustau and Lustau only, you can learn across the entire region because of the, again, the different styles they produce out of the three different cities in Jerez.
Okay. I have the three bottles, and this is how lack of education I am. I don't know what glass do you recommend? So I have, is this the right glass? I picked the first one. All right.
A nice white wine, small, maybe smaller red wine-ish stemware is what we recommend, yes.
Okay. So I had I think they call that an actual port glass. And then I had a white wine glass. And then this thing, which I received as wedding gifts. And I've been married 25 years and I have yet to use this glass. So I have no idea what I'm supposed to use this glass for, but I've got 10 of them sitting there. But I was like, well, maybe this is it. But
that's for grappa, I
think. Well, I've got a lot of them, and I've never ever used them, but they're cute. They're really cute.
There is a misconception. I want to say it, that people think they need to drink it in very small glasses. We stress the idea that that's not the better way to enjoy these wines. Because these are very complex, very sophisticated wines in many cases. So you want to have a nice, I don't want to say stemware, it can be stemless if you want, but you need a nice bowl. You need certain volume of air and space for the wines to breathe and express, to showcase all of their attributes. So a nice white wine glass. Whether it's a normal white wine glass or more a smaller red wine, it depends on the style of Jerez. Anything you can really let the wine express into, that would be our recommendation.
And then in terms of serving size, is a glass of sherry a 5-ounce pour? Is it equivalent to a wine pour? Like, and now, a word from our sponsor. Dracena Wines loves to give back. There are so many fur babies that deserve to find their forever home. We would love to be able to help as many as possible. If you are part of a nonprofit organization or know of a nonprofit organization that would like to hold a fundraiser, please contact us at contact@dracenawines.com or visit our website, dracenawines.com, to fill out the form. How does the fundraiser work? It is super simple and costs your group absolutely nothing. Together, we will choose a month that your group will be sponsored. During the month, you promote the fundraiser just like any other event you'd hold. At the end of the month, we will donate 20% of the sales to your organization. The donations will be made in the name of each individual who purchased the wine so that you know exactly who helped the animals. Our goal is to raise as much funds as we possibly can and to help as many animals as possible. So please help us help as many fur babies as we possibly can.
Listen, I would be drinking out of magnums all day long. But that's me. Now, people are used to drink smaller amounts of Jerez. And a 3-ounce pour is quite common in the U.S.
Okay.
One thing is true. A little bit of these wines takes you a long way. So maybe you don't need to drink 25 ounces yourself. But yeah, the typical more common pour, at least in the U.S., is a little smaller one. And I used to do 3 ounces as opposed to 5.
Okay.
But I will need repeated pours or refills. So I would rather go with a 5-ounce pour right off the bat. Okay. But that's so it depends who you ask.
All right. I like that answer. Okay, so I have a Fino, an Oloroso, and a Pedro Ximenez. And is there with wine, you're going from the drier, you know, to the bigger, you know, lighter to bolder. Is there a tasting order to sherry?
Yes. Great question. Yes, there is. And usually you go from the driest wines to the sweetest wines, again, going through everything in between. So in this case, I would start with the Fino,
okay,
then the Oloroso, and finally the Pedro Ximénez. Because Fino and Pedro Ximénez are two good examples of those two far ends of the spectrum. The Fino is going to be possibly the driest wine you're going to try today, Lori.
Okay.
The Pedro Ximénez, I guarantee you, is going to be the sweetest wine you're going to try today.
All right.
And the Oloroso, it's a dry wine. It's a dry Oloroso. But it makes more sense in between the two.
All right.
So if you had, instead of 3 bottles, you had 10 different sherries, we could agree on a certain order to enjoy them. And that will probably go from, you know, drier to sweeter, from dry to sweet. The thing with Jerez is that then it's very interesting to do certain, like, crossing over or overlapping back and forth, as long as you respect the sweet or the sugar levels. Once you get into sweet wines, I don't think you want to go back to dry wines necessarily. But among the dry wines and then with the sweet, you can play around. But in this case, we have these three styles, we have these three bottles. I would definitely try the Fino first, the Oloroso second, and the Pedro Ximénez third.
All right, so for those who are going to watch the video, here is the Fino. It is a beautiful color. It actually kind of, and if this is insulting, I don't mean it to be. It reminds me of a Sauvignon Blanc color. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, light, pale straw color. So do we swirl sherry like we swirl our typical
Absolutely.
Wines? All right.
Yeah.
And what can we expect from a pheno? What makes a pheno a pheno?
Yeah, the temperature, the serving temperature is also, as with any wine, something important to take into consideration. Some of these sherries are going to be more treated like or handled like a white wine. Some other sherries could be handled more like a red wine. So we're in a range between 45, 50 Fahrenheit to 60, you know, right? That's kind of the range between white and red. I don't think you want to go lower than 45. Honestly, I don't think you want to go higher than 60 percent or 60 degrees of temperature for any sherry. A pheno will be possibly that kind of white wine. We're gonna approach this wine as this is our white wine outside our culinary experience today. So you start with the pheno. This is the first appetizers or courses that you're enjoying. Many things we could be putting on the table that are great with these wines. We can talk about pairings too. But in any case, this is, think of a white wine. You were asking, do you twirl the glass? Yes. The temperature is important because there is a little bit of extra grape spirit here, extra alcohol that has been added to the wine. So if the wine was too warm, maybe you're going to be burning off your nose here. So as long as the wine is at the correct temperature, you will see this, you know, as you move the wine in the glass, it's going to be providing, throwing off different expressions, different aromas. So yeah, you can treat it exactly the same way, and hopefully you will treat it exactly or approach it the same way as you do with any white wine. This is wine, just has a little bit of extra alcohol added to it, but at the end of the day, this is a 15% alcohol wine. It's lower than some white wines from the New World you may have tried before. Right. Some of them may be 15.5, even 16%. So just white wine, treat it that way. What to expect? You describe the color very well. The aromas are going to be, this is different from what I'm, this is not a Sauvignon Blanc.
Right. No. There is no grapefruit here. There's no in hay.
In fact, there is lack of fruit. Maybe some green apple, not very fruity, but some green apple. But these wines are yeasty, very pungent. And with this aroma that is very different from any other style of white wine that you're used to, depending on where, right, maybe where you live or where your preferences are for table wines or for wines to have with your dinner, right? So that's the thing. The color looks like a normal wine. The aroma starts to be a little different from anything I'm, accustomed to. And then the palate, of course, will continue with that yeastiness and certain doughiness. Very lively, very kind of light, considering it has so much alcohol, 15% alcohol, and extremely dry. Extremely dry.
It is very dry, and the alcohol to me is more on the nose than on the palate. Like,
what temperature do you have it at?
It's room temperature, so it's probably like 70 something.
So the thing with the alcohol in these wines is that because of the method of production of these phenols, and these are what we know as biological wines, these are those wines that I'm sure you've seen many times that are kept in the cask under a layer of local yeast. Right. We call that floor. The floor yeast grows on the surface of the wines and stays there for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years or more. In this case, these are 5-year-old average wines, these Finos, Fino Jarana you have in your glass number one. So after 5 years or of constant aging under the yeast, under this active floor yeast, the type of alcohol that you have in the wine, yes, it's still a 15% alcohol percentage, but there is very, very little glycerol in that alcohol. And that makes the wines extremely light and sharp.
Yes.
On the palate. So very dry and very lean, very pungent, very sharp. A perfect first white wine, for instance.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want to wake up your appetite, or
as your guests are coming in for the evening of festivities, it tastes wonderful to give that to them as a opening.
These Finos and Manzanillas are no doubt among the best aperitifs in the world. Some people prefer a glass of sparkling wine, champagne, or dry cava. Okay, that's fine. But really, these Finos, Manzanillas, this style of Jerez, because of their characteristics, are excellent wines to get you in the mood for food. And then at the same time, they can go with a large variety of ingredients. So, but again, these are your white wines. We're starting the dinner, we're starting the meal. So a Fino possibly served first and with your first courses.
What makes it a Fino? Like what?
Biological aging type.
Aging type, okay.
So a wine that is a Jerez. Remember, we harvest the grapes, we crush them, we fully ferment these grapes that are Palomino grape variety. So we obtain these dry wines from Palomino, around 12%, 11% ABV. Once we have that base wine, we add alcohol to them. In the case of Finos, we go from 12% natural to 15%. Okay. It's 3 points of extra alcohol. And then what happens here is that this 15%-ish alcohol content in these Jerezes makes them the ideal type of wine for the local yeast to grow on top of.
Okay.
So 15% alcohol is proven to be an ideal amount of alcohol to enhance the floor yeast to grow on the surface. So any wine produced that way, aka white pale wine like the one you have in your glass with this yeasty pungent aromas and this very dry palate, that falls into the Fino or Manzanilla category.
Okay. And so now what makes that difference between a Fino and the Manzanilla? Is that an aging thing also?
The and this is a little confusing now. Fino and Manzanillas are the same style of Jerez. The only difference here is that Manzanilla is a term reserved for any Fino style wine produced in one particular town out of the three.
Oh, okay.
You can make Jerez in three different cities within the region. If you make a Fino style Jerez in Sanlúcar de Barrameda, which is one of the three cities, that's going to be known as a Manzanilla. But it's very similar to a Fino in many ways.
Okay, okay. That makes sense now. All right. So the next one I have up, and I don't know if you caught my face. I actually am a very good poker player, but not when it comes to like things like, I'm like, oh, what a difference in color. So now I have the Oloroso, and this is very dissimilar. It's kind of, I would say, brandy-like color. It is still pale. You can see straight through it, but it's got that brownish cigar color tint to it. So this is just due to aging?
Correct. So we started with a Fino o Manzanilla, which is a biological wine that remains over the course of those 4, 5, 6, 7 years within the Solera systems, always under the protection of that layer of yeast. And when I say protection, I want to emphasize that. The layer of yeast actually protects the wine from any oxidation. So you have a wine, I'm going back to the Fino.
Right.
Glass number one. You have a wine that stays in a cask for 5 years and it's pale. It's white. It's water-like color. And it doesn't show any oxidation at all. That's because the layer of yeast in these biological wines, is in these Finos, protected the wine from any possible oxidation. Remember, we had the wines at around 50% alcohol content. What happens with wine number two, Oloroso, that you have now in that glass? Here, the winemaker decided to go all the way up to 17-ish% alcohol, as opposed to 15. And what happens when you add 2 more degrees of alcohol to a wine and put it around 17, between 17 or 18% ABV, that wine now has too much alcohol for any floor yeast formation. So these Olorosos are kind of the opposite. This is a sherry wine from a very similar base wine from Palomino grape variety that receives a little bit more of alcohol in its origins at the first stages of its life, and gets also thrown into a Solera system, spends lengthy times, aging times in barrel, but not seeing any layer of yeast on the surface. So we're talking about oxidative style of sherry, which is possibly the opposite to biological in many ways. Still dry, there is no sugar involved. These are dry wines.
Nutty.
Of course, they concentrate over time. So you lose more water than anything else, and everything else becomes more prominent, including sugar. But these are dry wines on the palate.
And very nutty.
The color is completely different. The aroma profile is completely different. And then the mouthfeel is completely different, because now you have tons of weight and roundness compared to the very sharp, lively mouthfeel you had in glass number one.
It's very, and you serve this one warmer, correct, than the Fino?
55.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 10 degrees warmer. Okay. Maybe 60 if it's an older style of Oloroso. But red wine temperature.
Okay.
Maybe a little cooler sometimes, but red wine temperature, depending on the style of red wine as well. But let's handle this as a red wine. So we had the Fino as a white wine. We started with that. We had the first courses, the first appetizers and lighter food. Now we are in that section of the menu, of the meal, of the culinary experience, where we may be using a red wine. But instead of a red wine, we use an oxidative style. Why not this Oloroso that you're trying today? But very natty, very concentrated, very expressive, very complex, and with a lot of weight, a little bit of tannin, not much. This is 12 years in cask, but very old wood. Tons of tannin and tremendous roundness and body. This is a full body Jerez, so this could be ideal with your your meat dishes or your stews or, you know, any like steak tartare or pork, things like that, lamb, beef, anything, mushrooms.
Yeah, I was going into the earthiness.
Mm-hmm.
But it is completely different. It is
one and why number two. Right?
Yes, yes, it is. It is completely different. The nose is like an almond, not an almond paste, but like a nut paste, almost kind of like if you were doing like a cashew type nut or you know what I'm saying?
Chestnut, walnut, cashew. Usually the fino, glass number one,
mm-hmm.
is all sherry has certain nuttiness, but glass number one is more like a fresh white almond thing. Glass number two is more roasted walnut or chestnut, so it's still nutty, but in a different way.
Right. And then our last one. So now those first two, both of those wines are made from Palomino.
Yes.
Now this is a Pedro, and how do you say, Jimenez. Okay. So how does this grape differ from a Palomino, and why is it so special that they're making its own sherry?
Right. So we were saying the vast majority of the original production in Jerez is from Palomino grape variety, and only 45 after the fermentation is complete. The Pedro Ximénez and the Moscateles are kind of the exception to that rule, but there is very little of either of those produced. So Pedro Ximénez is not Palomino, is a separate grape variety altogether. And in Jerez, the way they handle Pedro Ximénez is always in order to produce this very special third wine you have in your glass now. The fortification, this is late harvest grapes, so there's a lot of natural sugar in them at the time of harvest. So as many other sweet wines in the world, you're going to be adding some sugar at some point, or the fermentation is going to naturally stop and still have a lot of residual sugar in that newly produced wine because you had a lot of sugar to start with. So in this case, Pedro Ximénez will receive that fortification, that addition of alcohol, much early than the finos of Olorosos. That's why the finos and Olorosos are dry. This is sweet. This is not only sweet. This is the sweetest wine you're going to try today.
Okay. Is it the sweetest of sherry of Jerez, or is it just the sweetest I'm tasting?
It's one of the sweetest wines in the world.
Okay.
Because in addition to the grapes having a lot of sugar at the time of harvest, because these are more late harvest grapes, besides that, there's a process here for this Pedro Ximénez of Jerez that involves a sun drying technique, a dehydration technique in the sun. So they lay out the grapes on mats for about 2 weeks in the Andalusian sun, and these grapes literally turn into raisins. So you're concentrating even farther, and that's why these wines have between 400 and 500 plus grams of sugar. And you see the color.
Yeah.
This is raisin wine. So harvest, lay out, sun dry, take them into the press facility, press the hell out of that juice and grapes, you know, it's hard to get the juice out. Small fermentation, difficult to ferment, something like that. Addition of alcohol. And then once you have the wine at the alcohol level you want, in this case, 12 years of aging in cask.
Wow.
And this is a baby as far as aging length. There are 30-minute or 100-year-old wines, and that's when they start to look like more oil.
Okay.
And the some of the most complex and some of the most balanced wines in the world. Because now, when they are young, they could be kind of sweet, but as they grow older in cask, they become, I don't want to say dry, but they become drier, mm-hmm. even more balanced, and super complex. So very special sweet wines. Italy and some parts of France, some parts of the Mediterranean may have similar production methods, but the Pedro Ximénez from Jerez are very unique, quite unique compared to pretty much anything else.
This is very...
everything we were just discussing.
Fig Newton, like opening up into a nice fresh bag of Fig Newton, or when my grandfather actually had a fig tree and you could bite into it.
Absolutely.
But you know, you're saying it's sweet, and it is a sweet wine, but it's not overpowering.
Boring.
Yeah, like it's not like, you know, that type of sweet. It's pleasant. It's a beautiful wine.
That's because of the aging process, the oxidation, the exposure to oxygen. In this case, of course, we don't have layer of yeast here. There's no floor possible. So this is similar to an Oloroso, similar to glass number two, in the aging method, because we're going to have wines in casks that are exposed to oxygen, like any other wine in a cask, in a barrel. Mm-hmm. So the length of contact with wood, the oxidative aging process, all that makes the wine more appealing, more balanced, very complex. And very sweet, and less sweet than just fresh, you know, almost grape juice.
Right. It's definitely not like that at all. And I have to, I was a little nervous to taste it on video because I was like, this is going to be sweet. But it's a beautiful sweetness. It's just mm-hmm. enough. And it's also, to me, it's in the full body range also. But it's
definitely the texture, the viscosity you find here, that's
know.
What sets these wines apart from anything else. This is like syrup.
Yeah. I have to say, I am so pleasantly surprised because I enjoyed each one, and surprisingly, I think this is my favorite one. And I don't know. They're so lovely, but they're so distinctive. And you think the first two are the same grape, and it's like a night and day characteristic, you know, tasting profile, but it's the same grape. And then they're beautiful. They really are beautiful.
Now, Laura, if you would like to have some sherry tonight with oysters, which of the three would you pick?
I would go with the Fino. Am I wrong?
Correct.
Okay. Like, I would go with the Fino.
Right. And if you want to have a nice blue cheese, maybe the glass one, right? Or some cake. So that's my point. Depending on what time of the day, what time of the meal
right. You
want to enjoy sherry, no worries. We'll find a sherry to go with that particular dish, ingredient, a moment out of your day.
Right. You could have a full tasting, like 9-course meal here going on with all different sherries going on.
Correct.
That is amazing. I really do enjoy them. I have to stop. I'm like, these are really good. if you're somebody new is coming into sherry, like me, what would you recommend their process? You know, they always joke about how people who are just getting into wine, right? They start off with that white Zinfandel, and then they kind of graduate and they, you know, maybe go into a drier white wine, and then they go into the tannin red wine. Is that, Is that how you would recommend it, starting with the Fino if you're brand new and going through?
That's an excellent question that I've been asking myself pretty much since I live in the U.S. Because I ask a lot of people the same question you just asked me. And I don't know. Some people in the U.S., because they're more familiar with certain spirits or certain appearance, or, you know, some of them, they find the Olorosos or Amontillados are easier to start with. And on the other hand, they find that Finos or Manzanillas are so special and rare and different that they need a little bit more of an acquired taste to enjoy the Finos.
Mm.
So, and then obviously maybe the sweet wines, glass number three, could be a crowd pleaser, right? But if we have to choose between, let's say maybe we start with the sweet wine, a sweet Jerez, and everyone will say, oh, this is very nice. And then once you have to transition into the dry, I really don't know whether it's going to be more an oxidative Oloroso style or a biological Fino style, if I'm to convince
an American,
a first timer in the U.S., that these are wines they need to consider. You tell me. I don't know which one you think between Fino and Oloroso is an easier one.
I don't know. I think the people that I know would probably go for the Oloroso.
Mm-hmm.
The Fino is very succinct.
Special.
Yeah, you know, like this is this, and it's beautiful. But I think to a new palate, it might be, what exactly is this? So middle of the road, let them go down the middle of the road and then choose which direction they want to go.
We have a wine in Jerez known as Amontillado, which is showing kind of like both worlds.
Okay.
Showing the best of both worlds. So an Amontillado is a Fino that after a certain time loses the layer of floor and starts to become something closer to an Oloroso in color and style and complexity. So the Amontillado is the guy in between. So that could be the answer. But I'm telling you, I don't know. I mean, the way we arrange them here, the way we taste, makes you think that maybe you want to start your sherry journey with Finos and biological wines, and then work your way from there. But maybe an Oloroso is a better wine to expose someone for the first time.
I don't know. You know, everybody's palate is different, and you don't know what they're gonna like or don't like. I definitely agree with the for today that order. That's the definite order that if I was sharing all three with somebody, that's the order it would go to. But you know, that's what's awesome about the House of Listo is you can go and order that variety pack that's got the different styles in it, and then they can just taste it and figure out which one they like the best. But I do have one more question. What is a cream sherry?
Well, a cream sherry is that. For sure. I mean, you said you remember a blue glass bottle.
Yep.
that's positive. A cream sherry that you used to see growing up. The cream sherries are very important sherries coming out of the region. About 50% of the global sales are still of cream sherry. Then we have the biological wines, then we have the oxidative wines, and then we have the sweet wines. So today, we tasted the other four categories of sherry. We tasted a Fino, an Oloroso, and a Pedro Ximénez. Those are not creams. A cream is something else. It's considered a fourth category. And again, 50% of the sales globally are of these wines, of these creams for the most part. A cream sherry is basically the combination of two of the three other styles that we covered today. So usually, let's take bottle number three, Pedro Ximénez. You take a certain amount of that wine and you pour it in a balance of Oloroso, let's say bottle number two. So if you combine bottle three and bottle two at a 20-80% ratio, that resulting blended wine, sweeter Jerez, not as sweet as Sol Pedro Ximénez, as Pedro Ximénez on its own, but sweeter than an Oloroso, a regular Oloroso, that is a cream.
All right.
So these sweeter Jerezes were very, and still are, very demanded, very important in Northern Europe, in UK, the Netherlands, you know, Belgium, Germany, the US. And those are the sherries that most people are familiar with. But today we tasted three other different styles. And as I said, most of the wine originally in the region is dry, bone dry in its origins. A cream will be something you produce down the road when you decide to blend two finished wines together to produce something else. And those were wines, and still are wines, very, very important, but from the 18th and 20th century that made the region so famous. And the reason why a lot of people think that Jerez has to be a sweeter one, because they relate Jerez to this particular style, cream style.
What can somebody expect to pay for the Fino, the Oloroso, and the Pedro Ximénez? Like, what's that price point?
Retail, these wines range between... I don't want to throw you off, but something between maybe 12 or 15 to $20.
Wow. That's a bargain.
No. These are the most underrated wines in the world. I'm not saying that. Many wine experts say that. It's not my quote.
I was guessing like 60, 70, 80. That's where I was guessing. And then like... Now that these are opened, right, what do I do with this? How do I store this? And how long do I have to drink it?
I would finish the bottle today.
You will? But I've got three of them open, so.
Remember, I'm drinking out of magic.
Yeah.
Jokes aside. Depending on the style, you may keep them in your fridge, half empty, upright, maybe for a week or two.
Okay.
But there is no reason for that I know of. I mean, of course, you have three open bottles of wine, so you don't want to finish them today, probably. But I recommend that as soon as you open a bottle of sherry, and if it's a 750, and there are a lot of 350s also being sold. Sorry, 395s. But if it's a 750, try to find an excuse to finish the bottles within 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
Some of the styles will hold a little bit better because they have been previously exposed to oxygen, like Olorosos or Pedro Ximénez, with this amount of sugar and alcohol and acidity and concentration. It's a slow process, but they're going to be losing finesse. They're going to be losing complexity in a matter of days. So try to finish the bottles if you can. Maybe I can. And some of them can be nice in fridges for a few weeks. I don't want to say how many, depending on the quality of the wine, the style. But I would tend to handle them as any other wine in the world.
Okay.
You know, they're going to be oxidizing in the bottle if you don't try to finish them sooner than later.
Okay. Well, I'm going out to dinner with some friends tomorrow night, so I'm going to be introducing them to sherry.
You're going to be fine tomorrow. You're going to be fine within the next few days.
Wonderful.
But don't keep them in your fridge for 3 months. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. And I still can't get over that price. That's insane.
Yeah, maybe around 20. These are not $50, $60 bottle of wine. That I'm positive. Somewhere around 15 and 30 tops. Under 30, yes.
Wow.
The Fino is cheaper than the Oloroso because of their production method and length of aging. And the Pedro Ximena, I think, is around the Oloroso price. These are under $30 retail, I believe.
Awesome. And then the last thing I just want to ask you, where can people find you on the social channels or a House Listo? Where can they find you to find out more information about sherry? And is there any recommended books you're like, yeah, this is like where I should go?
Oh, books? I have plenty. Well, all of these tag is sherry books. So I can give you some recommendations for books for sure. As far as what we do, lustal.es is a great website to learn more about this particular house and everything we do, in this case with my collaboration with them. And then you'll have all the styles and all their history, and you can learn a lot about sherry, about the region, just by visiting lustal.es. Fantastic.
Because they have the sherry concierge, right? You're doing a sherry concierge and a sherry roundtable on that?
Besides, on the side, we created a couple of years ago a blog that is under sherryjourney.com, where we kind of like try to convince Americans, try to explain the people in the U.S. how fascinating these wines are and how useful these wines could be for, standard American lifestyle too. Huh? So how nicely they may fit into that as well. Then we have interviews with chefs, all sort of pairings, cocktail alternatives, because guess what? These wines are also great in cocktails to mix. Many different approaches and angles about the sherry, the wines, and possibly myself working with them when I used to travel across the U.S. A few months ago. Within that, we just launched a new service out of Sherry Journey, the one you were mentioning, which is now the Sherry Concierge. And here's where we offer also extra assistance. It's a consulting service for anybody who wants to throw their questions at us, tell us about their plans, what they want to do with the wines, if they have some ideas, if they have a party that are putting together for next week, if they're reopening their restaurants and they want to incorporate new sherries or new sherry styles onto their menus, if they're working out of a retail store and they just realize they have a nice selection of sherries in a corner of the building and that they want to start promoting those a little, with more
zest,
more intensity. Anyone who wants to establish a conversation around these wines, sherry concierge, you have to be easy, and then we'll establish a communication, and we can discuss about pretty much anything around these wines.
Yeah. Awesome. And what about you personally? Are you on Instagram, Twitter?
My Instagram is at Lucas Paya, LucasPaya. My Twitter is at Lucas Paya as well. My email is lucaspaya@icloud.com.
All right.
Please get in touch anytime. If you have any questions, it will be my pleasure to further discuss sherry if necessary.
Well, Lucas, I want to thank you. This was such an educational, hour and a half now, time for us. And it's blown my mind. It really has, because one, I learned so much. Now I kind of understand the differences between the styles, but to taste these wines is phenomenal. And thank you for having Lestal send them as samples. I'm honored, and I'm going to be thrilled to share them with my friends tomorrow and open their eyes to it. So thank you very much.
Try them with food. Try them with food.
We are going to a tapas restaurant. Mm-hmm. So we will have lots of different styles, flavors coming on. So it'll be awesome.
That's fantastic. But let me say one last thing.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be Spanish cuisine. Spanish cuisine and sherry is absolutely wonderful. Anything you're planning to cook
sherry
throughout the week,
there's a sherry for it.
Anything.
Awesome.
That's the challenge.
All right. So there you have it, folks. He put out a challenge. Well, let's take pictures on social media of the sherry you're drinking and what food you're pairing it with, and let's bombard them on social media with all of those images.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. Thank you so much, Lucas. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and sharing your knowledge with me and teaching me about sherry. I definitely have a new appreciation for it, and I will be looking for more in the future.
Till the next time.
Yes, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye. This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have any suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoytbud. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. And of course, tell your wine-loving friends, because if you like the podcast, they will too. Until next week, sláinte!